were not married. In the eyes of the church, Aliena is still married to Alfred. Don't be stupid. What does the church know about it? Well, they know who they've married, and they wouldn't let me build the new cathedral while I was living with another man's wife. Her eyes flashed anger. So you've left her? Yes, until she can get an annulment. Mother put the rabbit's skin to one side. With a sharp knife in her bloody hands, she began to joint the carcass, dropping the pieces into the cooking pot bubbling on the fire. Prior Philip did that to me once when I was with Tom, she said, slicing the raw meat with swift strokes. I know why he gets so frantic about people making love. It's because he's not allowed to do it himself, and he resents other people's freedom to enjoy what is forbidden to him. Of course, there's nothing he can do about it when they're married by the church. But if they're not, he gets the chance to spoil things for them, and that makes him feel better. She cut off the rabbit's feet and threw them into a wooden bucket full of rubbish. Jack nodded. He had accepted the inevitable, but every time he said goodnight to Aliena and walked away from her door, he felt angry with Philip, and he understood his mother's persistent resentment. "It's not forever, though," he said. "How does Aliena feel about it?" Jack grimaced. "Not good. But she thinks it's her fault for marrying Alfred in the first place." "So it is. And it's your fault for being determined to build churches." He was sorry that she could not share his vision. "Mother, it's not worth building anything else. Churches are bigger and higher and more beautiful and more difficult to build, and they have more decoration and sculpture than any other kind of building. And you won't be satisfied with anything less." "Right." She shook her head in perplexity. "I'll never know where you got the idea that you were destined for greatness." She dropped the rest of the rabbit in the pot and began to clean the underside of its skin. She would use the fur. "You certainly didn't inherit it from your forebears." That was the cue he had been waiting for. "Mother, when I was overseas, I learned some more about my forebears." She stopped scraping and looked at him. "What on earth do you mean?" "I found my father's family." "Good God." She dropped the rabbit skin. "How did you do that? Where are they? What are they like?" "There's a town in Normandy called Cherbourg. That's where he came from."
"How can you be sure?"
"I look so much like him, they thought I was a ghost." Mother sat down heavily on a stool. Jack felt guilty about having shocked her so badly, but he had not expected her to be so shaken by the news. She said, What are his people like?" "His father's dead, but his mother's still alive. She was kind once she was convinced I wasn't the ghost of my father. His older brother is a carpenter with a wife and three children." "My cousins." He smiled. "Isn't that nice? We've got relations." The thought seemed to upset her, and she looked distressed. "Oh, Jack, I'm so sorry I didn't give you a normal upbringing." "I'm not," he said lightly. He was embarrassed when his mother showed remorse. It was so out of character for her. "But I'm glad I met my cousins. Even if I never see them again, it's good to know they're there." She nodded sadly. "I understand." Jack took a deep breath. "They thought my father had drowned in a shipwreck 24 years ago. He was aboard a vessel called the White Ship, which went down just out of Barfleur. Everyone was thought to have drowned. Obviously, my father survived, but somehow they never knew that, because he never went back to Cherbourg." "He went to Kingsbridge," she said.
"But why?"
She sighed. "He clung to a barrel and was washed ashore near a castle," she said. "He went to the castle to report the shipwreck. There were several powerful barons at the castle, and they showed great consternation when he turned up. They took him prisoner and brought him to England. After some weeks or months, he got rather confused. He ended up in Kingsbridge." "Did he say anything else about the wreck?"
"Only that the ship went down very fast, as if it had been holed."
"It sounds as if they needed to keep him out of the way." She nodded. "And then when they realized they couldn't hold him prisoner forever, they killed him." Jack knelt in front of her and forced her to look at him. In a voice shaking with emotion, he said,
"But who were they, Mother?"
"You've asked me that before."
"And you've never told me."
"Because I don't want you to spend your life trying to avenge the death of your father." She was still treating him like a child, withholding information that might not be good for him, he felt. He tried to be calm and adult. I'm going to spend my life building Kingsbridge Cathedral and making babies with Aliena, but I want to know why they hanged my father. And the only people who have the answers are the men who gave false testimony against him, so I have to know who they were. At the time, I didn't know their names. He knew she was being evasive, and it made him angry. But you know now.
Yes, I do,
she said tearfully, and he realized that this was as painful for her as it was for him. And I'll tell you, because I can see you'll never stop asking. She sniffed and wiped her eyes. He waited in suspense. There were three of them, a monk, a priest, and a knight. Jack looked at her hard. Their names. You're going to ask them why they lied under oath?
Yes.
And you expect them to tell you? Perhaps not. I'll look into their eyes when I ask them, and that may tell me all I need to know. Even that may not be possible. I want to try, Mother. She sighed. The monk was the prior of Kingsbridge.
Philip?
No, not Philip. This was before Philip's time. It was his predecessor, James. But he's dead. I told you it might not be possible to question them. Jack narrowed his eyes. Who were the others? The knight was Percy Hamley, the Earl of Shiring. William's father.
Yes.
He's dead, too.
Yes.
Jack had a terrible feeling that all three would turn out to be dead men, and the secret buried with their bones. Who was the priest? He said urgently.
His name was Walleran Bygod. He's now the Bishop of Kingsbridge.
Jack gave a sigh of profound satisfaction. And he's still alive, he said. Bishop Walleran's castle was finished at Christmas. William Hamley and his mother rode to it on a fine morning early in the new year. They saw it from a distance across the valley. It was at the highest point of the opposite ridge, overlooking the surrounding countryside with a forbidding regard. As they crossed the valley, they passed the old palace. It was now used as a storehouse for fleeces. Income from wool was paying for much of the new castle. They trotted up the gentle slope on the far side of the valley and followed the road through a gap in the earth ramparts and across a deep, dry moat to a gateway in a stone wall. With ramparts, a moat, and a stone wall, this was a highly secure castle, superior to William's own and to many of the king's. The inner courtyard was dominated by a massive square keep, 3 stories high, which dwarfed the stone church that stood alongside it. William helped his mother dismount. They left their knights to stable the horses and mounted the steps that led to the hall. It was midday, and in the hall Walleran's servants were preparing the table. Some of his archdeacons, deans, employees, and hangers-on were standing around waiting for dinner. William and Regan waited while a steward went up to the bishop's private quarters to announce their arrival. William was burning inside with a fierce, agonizing jealousy. Aliena was in love, and the whole county knew it. She had given birth to a love child, and her husband had thrown her out of his house. With her baby in her arms, she had gone off to look for the man she loved, and had found him after searching half of Christendom. The story was being told and retold all over southern England. It made William sick with hatred every time he heard it, but he had thought of a way to get revenge. They were taken up the stairs and shown into Walleran's chamber. They found him sitting at a table with Baldwin, who was now an archdeacon. The two clerics were counting money on a checkered cloth, building the silver pennies into piles of 12 and moving them from black squares to white. Baldwin stood up and bowed to Lady Regan, then quickly put away the cloth and the coins. Walleran got up from the table and went to the chair by the fire. He moved quickly like a spider, and William felt the old familiar loathing. Nevertheless, he resolved to be unctuous. He had heard, recently, of the dreadful death of the Earl of Hereford, who had quarrelled with the Bishop of Hereford, and died in a state of excommunication. His body had been buried in unconsecrated ground. When William imagined his own body lying in undefended earth, vulnerable to all the imps and monsters that inhabited the underworld, he shook with fright. He would never quarrel with his bishop. Walleran was as pale and thin as ever, and his black robes hung on him like laundry drying on a tree. He never seemed to change. William knew that he himself had changed. Food and wine were his principal pleasures, and each year he grew a little stouter despite the active life he led, so that the expensive chainmail that had been made for him when he turned 21 had been replaced twice over in the succeeding 7 years. Walleran was just back from York. He had been away for almost half a year, and William politely asked him, "Did you have a successful trip?"
"No,"
he replied. "Bishop Henry sent me there to attempt to resolve a 4-year-old dispute over who is to be Archbishop of York. I failed. The row goes on." The less said about that, the better, William thought. He said, "While you've been away, there have been a lot of changes here, especially at Kingsbridge."
"At Kingsbridge?"
Walleran was surprised. "I thought that problem had been solved once and for all." William shook his head. "They've got the Weeping Madonna." Walleran looked irritated. "What the devil are you talking about?" William's mother answered, "It's a wooden statue of the Virgin that they use in processions. At certain times water comes from its eyes. The people think it's miraculous."
"It is miraculous," William said. "A statue that weeps."
Walleran gave him a scornful look. Regan said, "Miraculous or not, thousands of people have been to see it in the last few months. Meanwhile, Prior Philip has recommenced building. They're repairing the chancel and putting a new timber ceiling on it, and they've started on the rest of the church. The foundations for the crossing have been dug, and some new stonemasons have arrived from Paris."
"Paris?"
Walleran said. Regan said, "The church is now going to be built in the style of Saint-Denis, whatever that is." Walleran nodded. "Pointed arches. I heard talk of it at York." William did not care what style Kingsbridge Cathedral would be. He said, "The point is, young men off my farms are moving to Kingsbridge to work as labourers. The Kingsbridge market is open again every Sunday, taking business away from Shiring."
"It's the same old story."
He glanced uneasily at the other two, wondering whether either of them suspected that he had an ulterior motive, but neither looked suspicious. Walleran said, "The worst mistake I ever made was to help Philip become prior." "They're going to have to learn that they just can't do this," William said. Walleran looked at him thoughtfully. "What do you want to do?"
"I'm going to sack the town again.
And when I do, I'll kill Aliena and her lover," he thought, and he looked into the fire so that his mother should not meet his eyes and read his thoughts.
"I'm not sure you can,"
Walleran said. "I've done it before. Why shouldn't I do it again? Last time you had a good reason, the Fleece Fair. This time it's the market. They've never had King Stephen's permission for that either."
"It's not quite the same.
Philip was pushing his luck by holding a Fleece Fair, and you attacked it immediately. The Sunday market has been going on at Kingsbridge for 6 years now, and anyway, it's 20 miles from Shiring, so it ought to be licensed." William suppressed his anger. He wanted to tell Walleran to stop being such a feeble old woman, but that would never do. While he was swallowing his protest, a steward came into the room and stood silently by the door. Walleran said, "What is it?"
"There's a man here who insists on seeing you, my Lord Bishop, name of Jack Jackson, a builder from Kingsbridge. Shall I send him away?"
William's heart raced. It was Aliena's lover. How had the man happened to come here just when William was plotting his death? Perhaps he had supernatural powers. William was possessed by dread.
"From Kingsbridge,"
Walleran said with interest. Regan said, "He's the new master builder there, the one who brought the Weeping Madonna from Spain."
"Interesting," said Walleran.
"Let's have a look at him," he said to the steward.
"Send him in."
William stared at the door with superstitious terror. He expected a tall, fearsome man in a black cloak to stride in and point directly at him with an accusing finger. But when Jack came through the door, William was shocked by his youth. Jack could not have been much past 20. He had red hair and alert blue eyes which flickered over William, paused on Regan, whose frightful facial sores arrested the glance of anyone who was not used to them, and came to rest on Walleran. The builder was not much intimidated by finding himself in the presence of the two most powerful men in the county, but apart from that surprising nonchalance, he did not seem very fearsome. Like William, Walleran sensed the young builder's insubordinate attitude and reacted with a coldly haughty voice. "Well, lad, what's your business with me?"
"The truth," Jack said. "How many men have you seen hang?"
William caught his breath. It was a shocking and insolent question. He looked at the others. His mother was leaning forward, frowning intently at Jack, as if she might have seen him before and was trying to place him. Walleran was looking coldly amused. Walleran said, "Is this a riddle? I've seen more men hanged than I care to count, and there will be another, if you don't speak respectfully."
"I beg your pardon, my Lord Bishop," Jack said, but he still did not sound frightened. "Do you remember all of them?"
"I think so," Walleran said, and he sounded intrigued, despite himself. "I suppose there is a particular one that you're interested in. 22 years ago at Shiring you watched the hanging of a man called Jack Cherbourg." William heard his mother give a muffled gasp. "He was a jongleur," Jack continued. "Do you recall him?" William felt the atmosphere in the room become tense all of a sudden. There was something unnaturally frightful about Jack Jackson. There had to be, for him to have this effect on Walleran and mother.
"I think perhaps I do remember," Walleran said,
and William heard in his voice the strain of self-control. What was going on here?
"I imagine you do," Jack said, and now he was sounding insolent again.
"The man was convicted on the testimony of 3 people. 2 of them are now dead. You were the 3rd. Walleran nodded.
"He had stolen something from Kingsbridge Priory, a jeweled chalice."
A flinty look came into Jack's blue eyes. He had done nothing of the kind.
"I caught him myself, with the chalice on him."
"You lied."
There was a pause. When Walleran spoke again, his tone was mild, but his face was as hard as iron.
"I may have your tongue ripped out for that," he said.
"I just want to know why you did it," Jack said, as if he had not heard the grisly threat.
"You can be candid here. William is no threat to you, and his mother seems to know all about it already." William looked at his mother. It was true she did have a knowing air. William himself was now completely mystified. It seemed, he hardly dared to hope, that Jack's visit actually had nothing to do with William and his secret plans to kill Aliena's lover. Regan said to Jack,
"You're accusing the bishop of perjury."
"I shan't repeat the charge in public," Jack said coolly. "I've got no proof, and anyway I'm not interested in revenge. I would just like to understand why you hanged an innocent man."
"Get out of here,"
Walleran said icily. Jack nodded as if he had expected no more. Although he had not got answers to his questions, there was a look of satisfaction on his face, as if his suspicions had somehow been confirmed. William was still baffled by the whole exchange. On impulse he said, "Wait a moment." Jack turned at the door and looked at him with those mocking blue eyes. "What?" William swallowed and got his voice under control.
"What's your interest in this? Why did you come here and ask these questions?"
"Because the man they hanged was my father," Jack said, and he went out.
There was a silence in the room. So Aliena's lover, the master builder at Kingsbridge, was the son of a thief who had been hanged at Shiring, William thought. So what? But Mother seemed anxious, and Walleran actually looked shaken. Eventually Walleran said bitterly,
"That woman has dogged me for 20 years.
He was normally so guarded that William was shocked to see him letting his feelings show.
"She disappeared after the cathedral fell down," Regan said.
"I thought we'd seen the last of her. Now her son has come to haunt us."
There was something like real fear in Walleran's voice. William said,
"Why don't you slap him in irons for accusing you of perjury?"
Walleran threw him a look of scorn, then said,
Your boy's a damn fool, Regan.
William realized the charge of perjury must be true. And if he was able to figure that out, so could Jack. Does anyone else know?
Regan said, Prior James confessed his perjury before he died, to the sub-prior, Remigius. But Remigius has always been on our side against Philip, so he's no danger. Jack's mother knows some of it, but not all. Otherwise she would have used the information by now. But Jack has travelled around. He may have picked up something his mother didn't know.
William saw that this strange story from the past could be used to his advantage. As if it had just occurred to him, he said, Then let's kill Jack Jackson. Walleran just shook his head contemptuously. Regan said that would serve to draw attention to him and his charges. William was disappointed. It had seemed almost providential. He thought about it while the silence in the room dragged out. Then a new thought came to him, and he said, Not necessarily. They both looked at him skeptically. Jack might be killed without drawing attention to him, William said doggedly.
All right. Tell us how,
Walleran said. He could be killed in an attack on Kingsbridge, William said, and he had the satisfaction of seeing the same look of startled respect on both their faces. Jack walked around the building site with Prior Philip late in the afternoon. The ruins of the chancel had been cleared, and the rubble formed two huge heaps on the north side of the priory close. New scaffolding was up, and the masons were rebuilding the fallen walls. Alongside the infirmary was a large stockpile of timber.
"You're moving along quickly," Philip said.
"Not as fast as I'd like," Jack replied. They inspected the foundations of the transepts. 40 or 50 labourers were down in the deep holes, shoveling mud into buckets, while others at ground level operated the winches that lifted the buckets out of the holes. Huge, rough-cut stone blocks for the foundations were stacked nearby. Jack took Philip into his own workshop. It was much bigger than Tom's shed had been. One side was completely open for better light. Half the ground area was occupied by his tracing floor. He had laid planks over the earth, put a wooden border a couple of inches high around the planks, then poured plaster onto the wood until it filled the frame and threatened to overflow the border. When the plaster set, it was hard enough to walk on, but drawings could be scratched on it with a short length of iron wire sharpened to a point. This was where Jack designed the details. He used compasses, a straight edge, and a set square. The scratch marks were white and clear when first made, but they faded to grey quite quickly, which meant that new drawings could be made on top of old ones without confusion. It was an idea he had picked up in France. Most of the rest of the hut was taken up by the bench on which Jack was working in wood, making the templates that would show the masons how to carve the stones. The light was fading. He would do no more woodwork today. He began to put his tools away. Philip picked up a template.
What's this for?
The plinth at the base of a pier.
You prepare things well in advance.
I just can't wait to start building properly. These days all their conversations were terse and factual. Philip put down the template.
I must go into Compline.
He turned away. And I shall go and visit my family, Jack said acidly. Philip paused, turned as if he was going to speak, looked sad, and left. Jack locked his toolbox. That had been a foolish remark. He had accepted the job on Philip's terms, and it was pointless to complain about it now. But he felt constantly angry with Philip, and he could not always keep it in. He left the priory close in twilight and went to the little house in the poor quarter, where Aliena lived with her brother Richard. She smiled happily when Jack walked in, but they did not kiss. They never touched one another nowadays, for fear they would become aroused, and then they would either have to part frustrated, or give in to their lust and risk being caught breaking their promise to Prior Philip. Tommy was playing on the floor. He was now a year and a half old, and his current obsession was putting things into other things. He had 4 or 5 kitchen bowls in front of him, and he tirelessly put the smaller ones inside the larger, and tried to put the larger inside the smaller. Jack was very struck by the idea that Tommy did not know instinctively that a large bowl would not fit inside a small one, but this was something human beings had to learn. Tommy was struggling with spatial relationships, just as Jack did when he tried to visualize something like the shape of a stone in a curved vault. Tommy fascinated Jack and made him feel anxious, too. Until now, Jack had never worried about his ability to find work, hold down a job, and support himself. He had set out to cross France without giving a moment's thought to the possibility that he might become destitute and starve. But now he wanted security. The need to take care of Tommy was much more compelling than the need to take care of himself. For the first time in his life, he had responsibilities. Aliena put a jug of wine and a spiced cake on the table and sat down opposite Jack. He poured a cup of wine and sipped it gratefully. Aliena put some cake in front of Tommy, but he was not hungry, and he scattered it in the rushes on the floor. Aliena said, "Jack, I need more money." Jack was surprised. "I give you 12 pennies a week. I only make 24.
"I'm sorry," she said. "You live alone. You don't need as much."
Jack thought this was rather unreasonable. "But a laborer only gets 6 pence a week, and some of them have 5 or 6 children." Aliena looked cross.
"Jack, I don't know how laborers' wives keep house. I never learned. And I don't spend anything on myself.
But you have dinner here every day, and there's Richard."
"But what about Richard?" Jack said angrily. "Why doesn't he support himself?" "He never has done."
Jack felt that Aliena and Tommy were enough of a burden for him.
"I don't know that Richard is my responsibility."
"Well, he's mine," she said quietly. "When you took me on, you took him too."
"I don't remember agreeing to that," he said angrily.
"Don't be cross." It was too late. Jack was already cross.
"Richard is 23 years old, 2 years older than I am. How come I'm keeping him? Why should I eat dry bread for breakfast and pay for Richard's bacon?
Anyway, I'm pregnant again."
"What?"
"I'm having another baby." Jack's anger evaporated. He seized her hand.
"That's wonderful!
Are you glad?" she said. "I was afraid you'd be angry."
"Angry? I'm thrilled!
I never knew Tommy when he was tiny. Now I'll find out what I missed." "But what about the extra responsibility and the money?"
"Oh, to hell with the money. I'm just bad-tempered because we have to live apart. We've got plenty of money, but another baby. I hope it's a girl."
He thought of something and frowned.
"But when?"
"It must have been just before Prior Philip made us live apart." "Maybe on Halloween," he grinned. "Do you remember that night you rode me like a horse?"
"I remember," she said with a blush.
He gazed at her fondly. "I'd like to do you now." She smiled.
"Me too."
They held hands across the table. Richard came in. He threw the door open and walked inside, hot and dusty, leading a sweating horse.
"I've got bad news," he said, panting.
Aliena picked Tommy up off the floor to get him out of the way of the hooves. Jack said, "What's happened?"
"We must all get out of Kingsbridge tomorrow," he said.
"But why?"
"William Hamley is going to burn the town again on Sunday."
"No!" Aliena cried. Jack went cold. He saw again the scene 3 years ago, when William's horsemen had invaded the Fleece Fair, with their blazing torches and brutal clubs. He recalled the panic, the screaming, and the smell of burning flesh. He saw again the corpse of his stepfather, with his forehead smashed. He felt sick at heart.
"How do you know?" he asked Richard.
"I was in Shiring, and I saw some of William's men buying weapons at the armourer's shop."
"That doesn't mean—"
"There's more. I followed them into an alehouse and listened to their talk. One of them asked what defences Kingsbridge had, and another said, none."
Aliena said, "Oh, God, it's true."
She looked at Tommy, and her hand went to her stomach, where the new baby was growing. She looked up, and Jack met her eye. They were both thinking the same. Richard went on.
"Later I got talking to some of the younger ones who don't know me. I told them about the Battle of Lincoln and so on, and said I was looking for a fight. They told me to go to Earl's Castle, but it would have to be today, for they were to leave tomorrow, and the fight would be on Sunday."
"Sunday," Jack whispered fearfully. "I rode out to Earl's Castle to double-check."
Aliena said, "Richard, that was dangerous."
"All the signs are there, messengers coming and going, weapons being sharpened, horses exercised, tack cleaned. There's no doubt of it." In a voice full of hatred, Richard finished, "No amount of evil-doing will satisfy that devil, William. He always wants more." His hand went to his right ear, and he touched the angry scar there with an unconscious, nervous gesture. Jack studied Richard for a moment. He was an idler and a wastrel, but in one area his judgment was trustworthy. The military. If he said William was planning a raid, he was probably right. "This is a catastrophe," Jack said, half to himself. Kingsbridge was just beginning to recover from the slump. 3 years ago the Fleece Fair had burned, 2 years ago the cathedral had fallen on the congregation, and now this. People would say the bad luck of Kingsbridge had come back. Even if they managed to avoid bloodshed by fleeing, Kingsbridge would be ruined. No one would want to live here, come to the market, or work here. It could even stop the building of the cathedral. Aliena said, "We must tell Prior Philip right away." Jack nodded. "The monks will be at supper. Let's go." Aliena picked up Tommy and they all hurried up the hill toward the monastery in the dusk. Richard said, "When the cathedral is finished, they can hold the market inside it. That will protect it from raids." Jack said, "But meanwhile we need the income from the market to pay for the cathedral." Richard, Aliena, and Tommy waited outside while Jack went into the monk's refectory. A young monk was reading aloud in Latin while the others ate in silence. Jack recognized an apocalyptic passage from the Book of Revelation. He stood in the doorway and caught Philip's eye. Philip was surprised to see him, but got up from the table and came out straight away. "Bad news," Jack said grimly. "I'll let Richard tell you." They talked in the cavernous gloom of the repaired chancel. Richard gave Philip the details in a few sentences. When he had finished, Philip said, "But we aren't holding a fleece fair. Just a little market." Aliena said, "At least we've got the chance to evacuate the town tomorrow. Nobody need get hurt. And we can rebuild our houses as we did last time." "Unless William decides to hunt down the evacuees," Richard said grimly, "I wouldn't put it past him." "Even if we all escape, I think it means the end of the market," Philip said gloomily. "People would be afraid to set up stalls in Kingsbridge after this." Jack said, "It may mean the end of the cathedral. In the last 10 years the church has burned down once and fallen down once, and a lot of masons were killed when the town burned. Another disaster would be the last, I think. People would say it's bad luck." Philip looked stricken. He was not yet 40 years old, Jack reckoned, but his face was becoming lined and his fringe of hair was now more grey than black. Nevertheless, there was a dangerous light in his clear blue eyes as he said, "I'm not going to accept this. I don't think it's the will of God." Jack wondered what on earth he was talking about. How could he not accept it? The chickens might as well say they refused to accept the fox for all the difference it would make to their fate. "So what are you going to do?" Jack said skeptically. "Pray that William will fall out of bed tonight and break his neck?" Richard was excited by the idea of resistance. "Let's fight," he said. "Why not? There are hundreds of us. William will bring 50 men, 100 at most. We could win by sheer weight of numbers." Aliena protested. "And how many of our people will be killed?" Philip was shaking his head. "Monks don't fight," he said regretfully, "and I can't ask townspeople to give their lives when I'm not prepared to risk my own." Jack said, "Don't count on my masons fighting either. It's not part of their job." Philip looked at Richard, who was the nearest they had to a military expert. "Is there any way we can defend the town without a pitched battle?" "Not without town walls," Richard said. "We've got nothing to put in front of the enemy but bodies." "Town walls," Jack said thoughtfully. Richard said, "We could challenge William to settle the issue by single combat, a fight between champions, but I don't suppose he would agree to it." "Town walls would do it," Jack said. Richard said impatiently, "They might save us another time, but not now. We can't build town walls overnight." "Can't we?" "Of course not. Don't be—" "Shut up, Richard," Philip said forcefully. He looked expectantly at Jack. "What's on your mind?" "A wall is not that hard to build," Jack said. "Go on." Jack's mind was spinning. The others were listening with bated breath. He said, "There are no arches, no vaults, no windows, no roof. A wall can be built overnight, if you've got the men and materials." "What would we build it of?" Philip said. "Look around you," Jack said. Here are ready-cut stone blocks intended for the foundations. There is a stack of timber bigger than a house. In the graveyard is a heap of rubble from the collapse. Down at the riverside there's another huge stack of stone from the quarry. There's no shortage of materials. And the town is full of builders, Philip said. Jack nodded. The monks can do the organizing, the builders can do the skilled work, and for laborers we'll have the entire population of the town. He was thinking rapidly. The wall would have to run all along the near side bank of the river. We'd dismantle the bridge. Then we'd have to take the wall up the hill, alongside the poor quarter, to join up with the east wall of the priory, out to the north, and down the hill to the riverbank again. I don't know whether there's enough stone for that. Richard said, It doesn't have to be stone to be effective. A simple ditch with an earth rampart made of the mud dug out of the ditch will serve the purpose, especially in a place where the enemy is attacking uphill. Surely stone is better, Jack said. Better, but not essential. The purpose of a wall is to force a delay on the enemy while he's in an exposed position, and enable the defender to bombard him from a sheltered position. Bombard him, Aliena said. With what? Stones? Boiling oil? Arrows? There's a bow in most households in the town. Aliena shuddered and said, So we still end up fighting after all. But not hand to hand. Not quite. Jack felt torn. The safest course, in all probability, was for everyone to take refuge in the forest, in the hope that William would be satisfied with burning the houses. But even then there was a risk that he and his men would hunt the townspeople down. Would the danger be greater if they all stayed here behind a town wall? If something went wrong, and William and his men found a way to breach the wall, the carnage would be appalling. Jack looked at Aliena and Tommy, and thought of the new child growing inside Aliena. Is there a middle course? He said. We could evacuate the women and children, and the men could stay and defend the walls. No, thank you, Aliena said firmly. That's the worst of both worlds. We would have no town walls and no menfolk to fight for us either. She was right, Jack realized. Town walls were no good without people to defend them, and the women and children could not be left unguarded in the forest. William might leave the town alone and kill the women. Philip said, Jack, you're the builder. Can we put up a town wall in one day? I've never built a town wall, Jack said. There's no question of drawing plans, of course. We'd have to assign a craftsman to each section and let him use his judgment. The mortar will hardly be set by Sunday morning. It will be the worst-built wall in England. But, yes, we can do it. Philip turned to Richard. You've seen battles. If we build a wall, can we hold William off? Certainly, Richard said. He will come prepared for a lightning raid, not a siege. If he finds a fortified town here, there will be nothing he can do. Finally, Philip looked at Aliena. You're one of the vulnerable people with a child to protect. What do you think? Should we run to the forest and hope William doesn't come after us, or stay here and build a wall to keep him out? Jack held his breath. It's not just a question of safety, Aliena said after a pause. Philip, you've dedicated your life to this priory. Jack, the cathedral is your dream. If we run away, you'll lose everything you've lived for. And as for me, well, I have a special reason for wanting to see William Hamley's power curbed. I say we stay. All right, Philip said. We build a wall. As night fell, Jack, Richard, and Philip walked the boundaries of the town with lanterns, deciding where the wall should go. The town was built on a low hill, and the river wound around two sides of it. The river banks were too soft to hold a stone wall without good foundations, so Jack proposed a wooden fence there. Richard was quite satisfied with that. The enemy could not attack the fence except from the river, which was almost impossible. On the other two sides, some stretches of wall would be simple earth ramparts with a ditch. Richard declared that this would be effective where the ground was sloping and the enemy was forced to attack uphill. However, where the ground was level, a stone wall would be needed. Jack then went round the village, gathering his builders together, getting them out of their homes, out of their beds in some cases, and out of the alehouse. He explained the emergency and how the town was going to deal with it. Then he walked around the boundaries with them and assigned a section of wall to each man. wooden fencing to carpenters, stone wall to masons, and ramparts to apprentices and laborers. He asked each man to mark out his own section with stakes and string before going to bed, and to give some thought, as he went to sleep, to how he would build it. Soon the perimeter of the town was marked by a dotted line of twinkling lights, as the craftsmen did their laying out by lantern shine. The blacksmith lit his fire and settled down to spend the rest of the night making spades. The unusual after-dark activity disturbed the bedtime rituals of most of the townspeople, and the craftsmen spent a good deal of time explaining what they were doing to drowsy inquirers. Only the monks, who had gone to bed at nightfall, slept on in blissful ignorance. But at midnight, when the craftsmen were finishing their preparations and most of the townspeople had retired, if only to discuss the news in hushed excitement under the blankets, the monks were awakened. Their services were cut short, and they were given bread and ale in the refectory, while Philip briefed them. They were to be tomorrow's organizers. They were divided into teams, each team working for one builder. They would take orders from him and supervise the digging, lifting, fetching, and carrying. Their first priority, Philip emphasized in his talk, was to make sure that the builder had a never-failing supply of the raw materials he needed, stones and mortar, timber and tools. As Philip talked, Jack wondered what William Hamley was doing. Earl's Castle was a day's hard ride from Kingsbridge, but William would not try to do it in a day, for then his army would arrive exhausted. They would set out this morning at sunrise. They would not ride all together, but would separate and cover their weapons and armor as they traveled to avoid raising the alarm. They would rendezvous discreetly in the afternoon, somewhere just an hour or two from Kingsbridge, probably at the manor house of one of William's larger tenants. In the evening they would drink beer and sharpen their blades and tell one another grisly stories about previous triumphs, young men mutilated, old men trampled beneath the hooves of war horses, girls raped and women sodomized, children beheaded and babies spitted on the points of swords while their mothers screamed in anguish. Then they would attack tomorrow morning. Jack shuddered with fear. But this time, we're going to stop them, he thought. All the same, he was scared. Each team of monks located its own stretch of wall and its source of raw materials. Then, as the first hint of dawn paled the eastern horizon, they went around their assigned neighborhood, knocking on doors, waking the inhabitants, while the monastery bell rang urgently. By sunrise, the operation was in full swing. The younger men and women did the laboring, while the older ones supplied food and drink, and the children ran errands and carried messages. Jack toured the site constantly, monitoring progress anxiously. He told a mortar maker to use less lime, so that mortar would set faster. He saw a carpenter making a fence with scaffolding poles, and told his laborers to use cut timber from a different stockpile. He made sure that the different sections of the wall would meet in a clean join, and he joked, smiled, and encouraged people constantly. The sun came up into a clear blue sky. It was going to be a hot day. The priory kitchen supplied barrels of beer, but Philip ordered it to be watered, and Jack approved, for people who were working hard would drink a lot in this weather, and he did not want them falling asleep. Despite the awful danger, there was an incongruous air of jollity. It was like a holiday when the whole town did something together, like making bread on Lammas Day or floating candles downstream on Midsummer Eve. People seemed to forget the peril, which was the reason for their activity. However, Philip did see a few people discreetly leaving town. Either they were going to take their chances in the forest, or more likely they had relations in outlying villages who would take them in. Nevertheless, nearly everyone stayed. At noon, Philip rang the bell again, and work stopped for dinner. Philip made a tour of the wall with Jack while the workers were eating. Despite all the activity, they did not seem to have achieved much. The stone walls had only reached ground level. The earthen ramparts were still low mounds, and there were vast gaps in the wooden fence. At the end of their tour, Philip said, "Are we going to finish in time?" Jack had been purposely cheerful and optimistic all morning, but now he forced himself to make a realistic assessment. "At this rate, no," he said despondently. "What can we do to speed things up? The only way to build faster is to build worse, normally." "Then let's build worse. But how?" Jack considered. "At the moment, we've got masons building walls, carpenters building fences, laborers making earthworks and townspeople fetching and carrying. But most carpenters can build a straightforward wall, and most laborers can put up a wooden fence. So, let's get the carpenters to help the masons with the stonework, have the laborers build the fences, and let the townspeople dig the ditch and throw up the ramparts. As soon as the operation is running smoothly, the younger monks can forget about organization and help with the laboring. All right. They gave the new orders as people were finishing dinner. Not only would this be the worst built wall in England, Jack thought, it would probably be the shortest lived. If all of it was still standing in a week's time, it would be a miracle. During the afternoon, people began to get tired, especially those who had been up in the night. The holiday atmosphere evaporated, and the workers became grimly determined. The stone walls rose, the ditch got deeper, and the gaps in the fence began to close. They stopped work for supper as the sun dipped toward the western skyline, then began again. At nightfall, the wall was not complete. Philip set a watch, ordered everyone except the guards to get a few hours of sleep, and said he would ring the bell at midnight. The exhausted townspeople went to their beds. Jack went to Aliena's house. She and Richard were still awake. Jack said to Aliena, "I want you to take Tommy and go and hide in the woods." The thought had been in the back of his mind all day. At first, he had rejected the idea. But as time went on, he kept returning to the dreadful memory of the day William burned the fleece fair, and in the end he decided to send her away. "I'd rather stay," she said firmly. Jack said, "Aliena, I don't know if this is going to work, and I don't want you to be here if William Hamley gets past this wall. But I can't leave while you're organizing everyone else to stay and fight," she said reasonably. He was long past worrying about what was reasonable. "If you go now, they won't know. They'll realize eventually. By then, it will be over. But think about the disgrace." "To hell with the disgrace!" he shouted. He was mad with frustration at not being able to find the words to persuade her. "I want you to be safe." His angry voice woke Tommy, who started to cry. Aliena picked him up and rocked him. She said, "I'm not even sure I'd be safer in the forest. William won't be searching the forest. It's the town he's interested in. He might be interested in me. You could hide in your glade. Nobody ever goes there. William might find it by accident." "Listen to me. You'll be safer there than here. I know it. All the same, I want to stay here."
"I don't want you here,"
he said harshly. "Well, I'm staying anyway," she replied with a smile, ignoring his deliberate rudeness. Jack suppressed a curse. There was no arguing with her once she had made up her mind. She was as stubborn as a mule. He pleaded with her instead. "Aliena, I'm scared of what's going to happen tomorrow."
"I'm scared too," she said, "and I think we should be scared together."
He knew he should give in gracefully, but he was too worried.
"Damn you then,"
he said angrily, and he stormed out. He stood outside, breathing the night air. After a few moments, he cooled down. He was terribly worried, but it was foolish to be angry with her. They might both die in the morning. He went back inside. She was standing where he had left her, looking sad. "I love you," he said. They embraced and stood like that for a long while. When he went out again, the moon was up. He calmed himself with the thought that Aliena might even be right. She could be safer here than in the woods. At least this way he would know if she was in trouble and could do his best to protect her. He knew he would not sleep, even if he went to bed. He had a foolish fear that everyone might sleep past midnight, and nobody would wake until dawn when William's men rode in, slashing and burning. He walked restlessly around the edge of the town. It was odd. Kingsbridge had never had a perimeter until today. The stone walls were waist high, which was not enough. The fences were high, but there were still enough gaps for 100 men to ride through in a few moments. The earth ramparts were not too high for a good horse to surmount. There was a lot to do. He stopped at the place where the bridge used to be. It had been taken to pieces and the parts had been stored in the priory. He looked over the moonlit water. He saw a shadowy figure approach along the line of the wooden fence and felt a shiver of superstitious apprehension, but it was only Prior Philip, as sleepless as Jack. For the moment, Jack's grudge against Philip had been overshadowed by the threat from William, and Jack did not feel unfriendly toward Philip. He said, "If we survive this,
We should rebuild the wall, bit by bit.
I agree, Philip said fervently. We should aim to have a stone wall right around the town within a year.
Just here, where the bridge crosses the river, I would put a gate and a barbican, so that we could keep people out without dismantling the bridge.
It's not the kind of thing we monks are good at, organizing town defenses.
Jack nodded. They were not supposed to be involved in any kind of violence.
But if you don't organize it, who will? How about Aliena's brother, Richard?
Jack was startled by that idea, but a moment's reflection led him to realize that it was brilliant. He'd do it well. It would keep him from idleness, and I wouldn't have to support him any longer, he said enthusiastically. He looked at Philip with reluctant admiration.
You never stop, do you?
Philip shrugged. I wish all our problems could be solved so simply.
Jack's mind returned to the wall.
I suppose Kingsbridge will now be a fortified town forevermore.
Not forever, but certainly until Jesus comes again.
You never know, Jack said speculatively. There may come a time when savages like William Hamley aren't in power, when the laws protect the ordinary people instead of enslaving them, when the king makes peace instead of war. Think of that, a time when towns in England don't need walls.
Philip shook his head. What an imagination, he said. It won't happen before Judgment Day.
I suppose not.
It must be almost midnight. Time to start again.
Philip, before you go.
What?
Jack took a deep breath. There's still time to change our plan. We could evacuate the town now.
Are you afraid, Jack?
Philip said not unkindly.
Yes, but not for myself. For my family.
Philip nodded.
Look at it this way. If you leave now, you will probably be safe. Tomorrow. But William may come another day. If we let him have his way tomorrow, we will always live in fear. You, me, Aliena, and little Tommy, too. He'll grow up in fear of William, or someone like William.
He was right, Jack thought. If children such as Tommy were to grow up free, their parents had to stop running away from William.
Jack sighed. All right.
Philip went off to ring the bell. He was a ruler who kept the peace, dispensed justice, and did not oppress the poor people under him, Jack thought.
But did you really have to be celibate to do that?
The bell began to toll. Lamps were lit in the shuttered houses, and the craftsmen stumbled out, rubbing their eyes and yawning. They started work slowly, and there were some bad-tempered exchanges with labourers. But Philip had the Priory Bakehouse going, and soon there was hot bread and fresh butter, and everyone cheered up. At dawn, Jack made another tour with Philip, both of them anxiously scanning the dark horizon for signs of horsemen. The riverside fence was almost complete, with all the carpenters working together to fill in the last few yards. On the other two sides, the earth ramparts were now as high as a man, and the depth of the ditch on the outside gave it an extra 3 or 4 feet. A man might scramble up with difficulty, but he would have to get off his horse. The wall was also man-height, but the last 3 or 4 courses of stone were completely weak because the mortar had not set. However, the enemy would not learn that until they tried to scale the wall, and at that point it might even serve to distract them. Apart from those gaps in the wooden fence, the work was done, and Philip issued fresh orders. The older citizens and the children were to go to the monastery and take refuge in the dormitory. Jack was pleased. Aliena would have to stay with Tommy, and the two of them would be well behind the front line. The craftsmen were to continue building, but some of their labourers now became military squadrons under Richard's leadership. Each group was responsible for defending the section of wall it had built. Those of the townsmen and women who had bows would be ready at the walls to shoot arrows down on the enemy. Those who had no weapons would throw stones, and they were to make stockpiles ready. Boiling water was another useful weapon, and cauldrons were heated, ready to be poured down on attackers at strategic points. Several of the townsmen had swords, but they were the least useful of weapons. If it came to hand-to-hand combat, the enemy would have got in, and the building of the wall would have been in vain. Jack had been awake for 48 hours straight. He had a headache, and his eyes felt gritty. He sat on the thatched roof of a house near the river, and looked out across the fields, while the carpenters rushed to finish the fence. Suddenly he realized that William's men might shoot burning arrows over the wall in an attempt to set fire to the town, without having to breach the wall. Wearily, He got off the roof and trotted up the hill to the priory close. There he found that Richard had had the same thought, and had already got some of the monks to organize barrels of water and buckets at strategic locations around the outer edges of the town. He was just leaving the priory when he heard what sounded like warning shouts. His heart racing, he scrambled up onto the roof of the stable and looked out over the fields to the west. On the road that led to the bridge a mile or so away, a cloud of dust betrayed the approach of a large group of horsemen. Until this moment, there had been an element of unreality about the whole thing. But now the men who wanted to burn Kingsbridge were right there, riding along the road, and suddenly the danger was hideously real. Jack felt a sudden urge to find Aliena, but there was no time. He jumped off the roof and ran down the hill to the riverbank. A crowd of men was gathered around the last gap. As he watched, they drove stakes into the ground, filling the space, and hastily nailed the last two bracing members to the back, finishing the job. Most of the townspeople were here, apart from those who had taken refuge in the refectory. A few moments after Jack arrived, Richard came running down, shouting, "There's nobody on the other side of town. There could be another group sneaking up behind us. Go back to your posts quickly." As they started to move off, he muttered to Jack, "There's no discipline, no discipline at all." Jack stared out across the fields as the dust cloud got closer and the figures of the individual horsemen became visible. They were like fiends from hell, he thought, insanely intent on death and destruction. They existed because earls and kings felt the need of them. Philip may be a damned fool on matters of love and marriage, Jack thought, but at least he's found a way to rule a community without the help of savages like these. It was an odd moment for such reflections. Was this the kind of thing men thought about when they were about to die? The horsemen came closer. There were more than the 50 Richard had forecast. Jack reckoned the number was nearer to 100. They headed for the place where the bridge had been. Then they began to slow down. Jack's spirits rose as they came to a ragged halt and reined in their horses in the meadow on the other side of the river. As they stared across the water at the brand new town wall, somebody near Jack started to laugh. Someone else joined in, and then the laughter spread like wildfire, so that soon there were 50, 100, 200 men and women roaring with laughter at the embarrassed men-at-arms, stuck on the wrong side of the river with no one to fight. Several of the horsemen dismounted and went into a huddle. Peering through the faint morning haze, Jack thought he could see the yellow hair and red face of William Hamley at the center of the group, but he could not be sure. After a while they got back on their horses, regrouped, and rode off. The people of Kingsbridge raised a mighty cheer. But Jack did not think William had given up yet. They were not going back the way they had come. Instead, they were heading upstream alongside the river. Richard came to Jack's side and said, "They're looking for a ford. They'll cross the river and sweep through the woods to come at us from the other side. Spread the word." Jack went swiftly around the wall, relaying Richard's forecast. To the north and east, the wall was of earth or stone, but there was no river in the way. On that side, the wall incorporated the east wall of the priory close, only a few steps from the refectory where Aliena and Tommy had taken refuge. Richard had stationed Oswald, the horse dealer, and Dick Richards, the son of the tanner, on the roof of the infirmary with their bows and arrows. They were the best shots in town. Jack went to the northeast corner and stood on the earth rampart, looking across the field to the woods from which William's men would emerge. The sun climbed in the sky. It was another hot, cloudless day. The monks came around the walls with bread and beer. Jack wondered how far upstream William would go. There was a place a mile away where a good horse could swim across, but it would look risky to a stranger, and William would probably go a couple of miles farther, when he would come to a shallow ford. Jack wondered how Aliena was feeling. He wanted to go to the refectory and see her, but he was reluctant to leave the wall. For if he did it, others would want to, and the wall would be left undefended. While he was resisting the temptation, there was a shout, and the horsemen reappeared. They came out of the woods to the east so that Jack had the sun in his eyes when he looked at them. No doubt that was intentional. After a moment he realized they were not just approaching, they were charging. They must have reined in the woods out of sight and spied out the ground, then planned this charge. Jack went taut with fear. They were not going to look at the wall and go away. they were going to try to breach it. The horses galloped across the field. One or two townspeople shot arrows. Richard, standing near Jack, yelled angrily, "Too early! Too early! Wait until they're in the ditch! Then you can't miss!" Few people heard him,